Talk Radio.
So I'm gon' drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You will fake, so I'm gon' drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Girl, please protect me if this shit go left. Cause I can cook a kilo by my goddamn self. In the kitchen, water whipping with the left. I don't know women, but I know who got the milk.
Son of a bitch. What's up, people?
Cause I can lock a trap down by myself.
Oh, yeah.
You ain't no Gucci to go broke, then hold your breath.
I have a lovely Friday show for you. Healthcare. Here we go. I mean, everybody should be talking about what Trump is currently doing to the healthcare system. I mean, even if you're a big-time Republican, even if you were ride-or-die Team Trump, I mean, he's basically sabotaging the healthcare system on purpose to try to get his shitty bill through. We're going to talk about that. In fact, we're going to lead with that in just a second. A reporter speaks the truth on MSNBC and gets his mic cut. Wow. Okay, so we'll cover that as well. We have explosions at chemical plants in Texas as a result of the flooding. Joyanne Reed explains how, people, they don't want free college, whatever. That's how you can't run on that. What else was there about? Oh, yes, Donald Trump's focus group. People who voted for Trump are now asked how they feel about President Trump. And, is it brutal. The reactions, oh my goodness, the reactions. They're absolutely out of this world. So, okay. Let's go ahead and get started. And we'll do that with the conversation about healthcare. President Trump is actively trying to collapse the U.S. healthcare system. Now, I know that sounds, extreme and crazy, and if you're strongly on Team Trump, you recoil at that and say, oh, come on with this conspiracy theory nonsense. But it's really not an exaggeration. So look at this. Trump ramps up Obamacare sabotage with huge cuts to enrollment programs. Advertising and promotional budget for healthcare.gov has been slashed by 90%, and programs to help people sign up also face a nearly 40% cut. So the glue that holds Obamacare together, apart from the individual mandate, which says you have to buy insurance on the private market if you don't qualify for the Medicaid expansion, of course. But it's getting the word out there about Obamacare and signing people up, because people can't use it if they don't know what the fuck it is or how to sign up. And probably the most important part of this is the government runs ads all over the place where they say, hey, this is the exchange, this is where you go and you get your health insurance, here's how you sign up. And so it's not just the ads that they put on TV, but then there's also the programs that help people sign up, gives them their options and all that stuff. Well, we have a 90% cut in the ads, 40% cut in the programs that help people sign up. So in other words, you don't bring new people in, which means you can't fund it, which means the individual mandate is basically not really there at all, and then everything falls apart because you don't have enough of an insurance base. And it's not like they're doing this and it's like, whoops, looks like this isn't going to be viable in the long run. No, they're doing this because it's not going to be viable in the long run. I mean, this is a sentiment that Trump has expressed. This is something Lindsey Graham has mentioned. Yeah, why not let Obamacare fail on purpose? And this is actively trying to moving in the direction of making it fail so that then we can step in and say, oh, fucking Obamacare and the Democrats, I guess now you have no choice but to pass Trump care. I guess now you have no choice but to make the healthcare system even worse. So in a world that made sense, this would be, you know, number one news everywhere. Because it's unconscionable what the Republicans are doing. They are actively trying to make the healthcare system collapse so that they can step in and say, oh, now we're the answer. We're going to fix it. So now pass Trump care, please. This is Bill Maher had a good way of describing this in the context of something else. He says it's like they throw a bucket of shit on you. Then when the flies come, they try to sell you relief from the flies. Like, oh, look at that, you're covered in shit. Oh, look at that, you got all these flies on you. Anyway, here's fly relief. If you didn't throw the bucket of shit on them, then they wouldn't have the flies and they wouldn't need the fly relief. That's what they're doing. Oh, let's, shiv Obamacare in the side a few times. And then go, what? Oh, no. See, Obamacare is collapsing under its own weight. It's all the problem of Obamacare. And so we're making life worse for many people. And then we're going to step in and say, see, blame the Democrats. Now vote for us even more. So this is as cynical and disgusting as it gets. But understand, what else would they do? What else would they do? They don't have anything. This is the point about the Republican Party in Washington and the far right in general. They don't stand for anything when it comes to health care. And since they don't stand for anything, they don't have a cohesive, coherent ideology. So they have to, you know, basically cheat, tank Obamacare on purpose to then get their shittier reform through. If you ask somebody on the so-called far left, hey, what should happen with health care? They say Medicare for all. You'll get an answer like that. You know, and even if you talk to some shittier corporate Democrats, some of them will say public option, which is like the watered down version of Medicare for all. It's like the opt-in, the buy-in option for a public healthcare system. So even among the shittier Democrats, you're going to get an answer. Hey, what do you believe in? Public option. Or for the actual populist left, what do you believe in? Medicare for all. You get an answer like that, and they can explain to you why. Oh, we have lower costs and we cover everybody, and the outcomes show when you look at the studies that it's better in the countries that have these kinds of systems. If you talk to somebody on the far right, hey, what do you prefer? What's your ideal healthcare system? What are they going to say? The best you'll get, most of them will be, I don't know. But the best you'll get is free market. Yeah, on a free market. We need that market to be freer. And it's got to be like a market and stuff. So when you, like, what does that mean? What are you saying? You do know that the system we had prior to Obamacare was a system that was an even freer market. So your ideal has already empirically, objectively shown to have worse outcomes. And when we had a system that was more in line with your ideal, we needed immediate reform. Because prices were skyrocketing, 45,000 people were dying every year because they didn't have access to basic health care, 50 million or so people were uninsured. So your ideal is to go back to the bigger problem, because Obamacare is not great. It's just a small step in the right direction. But your ideal is to go make it worse. So since that's the reality, they either have no ideal when it comes to healthcare and health insurance, or they say something like free market and like do tort reform and remove the lines around the states, as if that would substantively address any of the major problems we have in our health insurance system and healthcare system. They have no answer, so they say that. Nobody wants that. Fucking Trump care had a 17% approval rating because it's a mix of right-wing talking points sprinkled in with gigantic tax cuts for the rich and gutting Medicaid to the tune of $800 billion. Nobody wanted that shit. That's why it had a 17% approval rating. So they can't get it through on its own merits. So what do they have to do? Tank Obamacare on purpose while nobody's looking, and then blame the Democrats, and then we try to get our bill passed that way. I mean, they're the Republican Party in Washington, it's barely an actual political party anymore. I mean, they're just there to be a wrecking ball to fuck everything up. And that's not to say the Democrats are good, because they're not. They're basically a center-right party, a corporatist party. But the Republicans are, like, comically off the spectrum. I mean, it's sheerly laughable if it wasn't also so tragic and there weren't also so many lives that were going to be affected. So this is where we are, man. The President of the United States of America is sabotaging the U.S. healthcare system and health insurance system on purpose so that he can then step in, blame the Democrats, and try to sell you relief, which would make it even worse. This really is worst-case scenario. Okay. Donald Trump, what a gigantic douchebag. I mean, just legendary douchebag. Okay. Now, we're going to go to, oh, I love this story. I love it, I love it, I love it. We have MSNBC and their focus group. I think I have like a bunch of videos for you guys today. Where is the focus group? Here we go. MSNBC did a focus group with people who voted for Donald Trump. So this is going to be interesting. And it's bad news for Trump, man. Trump is in trouble. He's on the ropes. He's reeling. He's losing everybody. And what I want you to take note of here is they're going to start out giving the reasons that I would expect as to why they voted for Trump and why Trump is now letting them down. But then also towards the end, I noticed something very interesting. See if you catch on to it, but we'll come back and I'll explain exactly what that is. Let's watch.
I surely am not as base, even though I voted for him. It was more, just to be honest, an anti-Hillary vote. I liked his platform, Make America Great Again, keeping jobs in the United States.
My vote was more, I didn't want more of what we already had.
The thing that drives me crazy is all the tweeting he does. I don't pay any attention to it, but it's in the news. It's on the newscast every day, evening, and night. My wife watches it. It drives me crazy because the television is on all the time.
Crazy.
Why?
Well, that was a lot of it, the tweeting. It has to stop.
Did you vote for
him? Unfortunately, yes.
Okay.
Because regardless of what he truly wants to get done, whatever that may be, he has got to be his own worst enemy. He couldn't be any worse at achieving goals in politics. What most disappoints me is he's such an incredibly flawed individual that's articulated many of the values that I hold dear, and the messenger is overwhelming the message. I wish he was on the opposite side of where I hold dear, because it would be better for the causes that I like.
As much as I thought he would be a quick learner and delegate to top-notch individuals, he hasn't done that.
We know he's a nut. Everybody knew he's a nut. But there comes a point in time where you need to become professional. He's not even professional, let alone presidential. Chill out, man.
What would you whisper into his ear, Russell?
Quit tweeting.
What would you whisper in his ear, David?
Stop picking on the media. Love them.
Brian, what would you whisper into his ear?
Start listening to other people.
Tony, what would you...
Okay. Ended kind of abruptly there, but I think that was the end of it. That was interesting. So at the beginning, they said basically all the things that I would have expected, which is, hey, here's why I voted for Trump. It was really an anti-Hillary vote. There's going to be a lot of that across the country. I know corporate Democrats love to shove their head in the sand and act like that couldn't possibly exist because isn't Hillary so lovely? But no, people despise Hillary Clinton, and there was a lot of an anti-Hillary vote out there. So there's one person saying it. Another person said, I thought he was going to keep jobs in the U.S. Okay, there you go. So this goes back to the populism argument, how a lot of the people who voted for Trump voted for him because he's anti-establishment and because he seemed to push a populist economic message. Hey, we need to rebuild here at home. Why are we wasting money overseas? We need to stop with the bad trade deals. The forgotten man will never be forgotten again. A very populist, oftentimes left-wing sounding economic message. Well, since he got in office, he hasn't delivered on any of that shit. He's going in the opposite direction. And that's exactly what these people are pointing out. Even with the thing he did that was the best, killing TPP, he's bringing back the worst provisions and flipping it into the renegotiation of NAFTA. So people are on to him. Another person said, basically, he didn't want the status quo. You know, I don't want the status quo. This guy's not the status quo. That's why I voted for him. So what you see here, these are the people who, in this focus group, you can't call them the irredeemable deplorables because they're not. I mean, an irredeemable deplorable is somebody who votes for Trump because he, you know, said stuff like, the Mexicans, they're criminals, they're rapists. I assume some are good people. Or, you know, when he said, I want to ban all Muslims from coming to the U.S., a total and complete shutdown of Muslims. The people who voted for him because of that stuff, I want to do nationwide stop and frisk. Those are the irredeemable deplorables, the people who are like legit white nationalists and supremacists and shit like that. They exist, and the, you know, fundamentalist evangelical Christians, they exist, but that's like 25%. So these are people who the Democrats could have won, but they didn't for the reasons laid out. Hey, it's an anti-Hillary vote. He wants to keep jobs in the U.S. I don't want the status quo. So these are people who the Democrats could have won if they had a better candidate, Bernie Sanders. But then did you notice what happened as they moved along there and as we got towards the end of the clip? They asked, okay, so what's bothering you about him? What I found amazing is that all of the things that people used to like about him are now becoming the things that it's grating on their nerves. So people used to say, oh, yeah, he's definitely anti-establishment and he's really wrecking shit. So that's why we love him because, yeah, he's different. And he's not the status quo. But now they're saying, sweet Jesus, he's not the status quo. Now they're saying he's not professional. Never mind not presidential. He's not even professional. He needs to stop with the fucking tweeting. You know, and I'm sure these people are thinking about the same things I think about when I reflect on Trump's Twitter activity. Like prodding North Korea on a regular fucking basis. Okay? Like that's not okay. That's moronic and dangerous. One of the guys said, the messenger is overwhelming the message. So in other words, his giant personality, where he shoots from the cuff and he does the fake straight shooter thing, yeah, I'm going to tell like it is, even though he's lying almost every time he opens his goddamn mouth. People are like, the messenger is overwhelming the message. It almost doesn't matter what he's saying, because the way he's saying it is fucking insufferable. And I like how one person's advice to him was, chill out. Chill out, man. Come on. You got to chill out. Because what's happened is you have a guy who hasn't delivered on policies that help the American people. He just hasn't. You know, he's escalated wars since he got in office. All of his executive orders are, for example, to allow coal companies to pollute waterways, raising taxes on the middle class, deregulation. For every one new regulation, we get rid of two regulations. So he's done nothing that actually helps the people. He's helped corporations. He's helped the establishment. He's packed his administration with Goldman Sachs insiders when he railed against Wall Street and Goldman Sachs on the campaign trail. So when you don't deliver on anything, but you pretend to have that, oh, yeah, I'm an outsider way of speaking. Well, that was a weird accent that I threw in there. I don't know what that was. People are sick of it. People go, yeah, spare me your fucking I'm anti-establishment, I'm a fake straight shooter bullshit. Everything about you is now insufferable because, like, all the stuff we thought was cute before and, like, ooh, he's different, like all the tweeting and all the not being professional. Now when we see you're not getting shit done for the people, now we hate it. So now some of the things that people loved about Trump are now the things they hate about Trump. wow, look out, son, you're in trouble. Woo, you're in trouble. Now, of course, the other part of the picture is, will the Democrats get their shit together? Because it ain't a guarantee that the Democrats win. I mean, Michael Moore was talking about it the other day. He said Trump's on track to get reelected. In my mind, it's still a coin toss right now, even though Trump has a 60% unfavorability rating, because he had a 60% unfavorability rating on Election Day. So he's in the ballpark of the same unfavorability rating, but he won. He beat Hillary Clinton. So it really is incumbent upon the Democrats to run a candidate that is better and who can run a decent campaign, especially in comparison to Hillary Clinton. So this is why, you know, I'm scared to death of Cory Booker or Kamala Harris, because they can lose. So can Tim Kaine. He can lose. Hillary Clinton, again, if she would run, she could lose. The people who more likely cannot lose, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, I think they'll definitely win. And then there's people who are on the bubble. I call them the bubble boys. Al Franken. If Al Franken ran against Trump, I think Al Franken would likely win, but it's still a race. Even Andrew Cuomo, who's a corporate Democrat, he does just enough where he might be able to defeat Trump, because in New York he did increase in the minimum wage, did some good gun safety regulation after Sandy Hook, pushed with Bernie a free college bill. Now you mix that in with other flat-out corporate Democratic shit, like disbanding an anti-corruption commission when it started looking into him. That's as bad as it gets. That's straight out of some Hillary Clinton playbook garbage. Criminalizing BDS. So he's one of those ones who might be, it'll be close, but I think he might be able to edge out Trump. But point is, don't make the same mistake, Democrats, and they might do it, because this guy is vulnerable as a motherfucker, as you can see right here. Okay. All right, now let's talk about a little update here on what's going on in Houston. Well, and more Texas in general, I guess you could say. I do have a video. Let's see if we can find it. Yes, here it is. I'll have to read it to you because there's writing. You'll just hear like music, but there's writing on the screen. There have been explosions at chemical plants in Texas as a result of the flooding from Hurricane Harvey. I have a short video on this for you. Check it out. Smoke emanated from Arkema chemical plant 20 miles outside Houston after two explosions occurred following flooding from Hurricane Harvey. The company warned of the possibility of explosions, and the area was evacuated. An officer was taken to the hospital after inhaling fumes. The fumes are believed to be non-toxic. The chemicals were at risk of exploding if not kept cool. The company released a video of what an explosion would look like. Arkema prepared for Harvey. But their two sources of backup power were affected by flooding. Wow, look at that. Officials warned that susceptible chemicals exist in several other locations at the plant. And further explosions could be imminent. Okay, there's a lot to say about this. First of all, don't give me the fucking bullshit of, well, they had two backup things. Well, apparently, they weren't done properly if when you have flooding like we have this time around, they don't work. Well, there's supposed to be some fail-safe mechanism. And who the fuck, engineered them? Mr. Magoo? You have flooding, and whoops, it doesn't work. Well, it's supposed to be that in case of a scenario like this, things work. And it doesn't work. So, God, I fucking hate the way they had to back up. What are you going to do? But they fucking didn't build it right, clearly. It's the same shit like with Fukushima. Like, well, they had the systems to back it up, and then it just didn't work. So then you didn't build it right now, did you, you motherfuckers? God, like, that shouldn't be an option. Like, it shouldn't be on the table. Like, well, look, we have all these systems if things fail. But somehow, seemingly, they always seem to fail when you get a worst-case scenario. Like, you couldn't envision a situation like this where there's a tremendous amount of flooding, especially in a city like Houston, where apparently there's not good drainage. Like, come on, man. It's just unacceptable. Okay. And then, furthermore, who doesn't love that back-to-back there, where it says, a police officer was brought to the hospital after inhaling the fumes, and then the very next thing was, the fumes are believed to be non-toxic. You just contradicted yourselves. If they're non-toxic, how is he brought to the hospital for breathing them in? They're not bad for you. It's just that if you breathe them in, you have to go to the hospital. So then they're bad for you. Like, come on. I can't. The fact that the media, and this is Huffington Post, the fact that the media just fucking chugs the Kool-Aid of whatever the chemical company says. We had the fail-safe mechanism, the backup, if something happened, but they stopped working. So then they're not very good now, are they? And, oh, yeah, oh, if they're not toxic, but the officer went to the hospital for breathing them in. So they are toxic, you motherfucking lawyers. You know, maybe the media should recognize, hey, maybe these guys are trying to cover their ass from potential lawsuits and whatnot. But no, just parrot whatever the fucking chemical CEO says. Wonderful. Now, many of you might be thinking, like everybody should be thinking after this, how the fuck can this happen? How can we really, the year's 2017, and with standard flooding, there's flooding going on in Texas. All of a sudden, the chemical plants, the backup mechanisms fail, and what are you going to do? Whoops, sorry, we're going to poison everybody. How can this happen? Well, the International Business Times actually has the answer. Take a look at this. The French company that says its Houston area chemical plant is spewing noxious smoke and may explode successfully pressed federal regulators to delay new regulations designed to improve safety procedures at chemical plants, according to federal records reviewed by International Business Times. The rules, which were set to go into effect this year, were halted by the Trump administration after a furious lobbying campaign by plant owner Arkema and its affiliated trade association, the American Chemical Council, which represents a chemical industry that has poured tens of millions of dollars into federal elections. The effort to stop the chemical plant safety rules was backed by top Texas Republican lawmakers who have received big campaign donations from chemical industry donors. Representatives from Arkema Americas and the American Chemistry Council did not immediately respond to requests for comment. There you go. It's the same fucking answer to every other issue that we tend to have in American politics. Hey, why were there not good regulations here? Well, it turns out that lobbyists for the chemical companies bought politicians, in this case, Texas Republicans. And it turns out they got Trump to reverse a new piece of regulation that would have prevented stuff like this. Okay. The media across the board should be discussing this, and none of them are. I mean, this is a fantastic report in the International Business Times doing some investigative journalism to figure shit out, but the media is not talking about this. If you don't connect the dots for Americans, they're not going to know. How are they going to know? They're going to say, oh, it was a natural disaster and something happened at a chemical plant and that sucks. No. We have the ability to prevent stuff like this from happening through proper regulation. We didn't get the proper regulation because of corruption, because of money and politics, and because of the idiotic far-right ideology of deregulation is always preferable. Well, here are the fruits of that. So maybe we should get the money out of the system, stop the corruption, end the insane power hold that corporations have on our politics, and maybe we should move away from this deregulate everything mentality, because these are the results, and it's ugly. Okay. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, oh boy, we got Joy-Ann Reid. And then the media is fawning over itself. That doesn't make sense. Falling over itself, fawning over a potential 2020 ticket. We will talk about exactly what ticket that is. You don't want to miss it. Stay right there. We will be right back.
I'll walk the world.
death you with the left, the left. You will fake so I'm gon' death you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the lecturer nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You will fake so I'm gon' death you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the lecturer nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left.
Alright, we're back here, buddy. Okay, time for the Joy Reid segment. Don't you feel excited? Joanne Reid went on The Daily Show earlier this week, and she made some comments that are being pretty universally derided, so let's listen and then we'll discuss.
Let's pivot and talk about the Democrats then, because you would think in any other time, in any other place, going up against Donald Trump would mean you are a shoo-in, right? You're going to win this thing, you're going to take it all. And yet it feels like the Democrats themselves are experiencing rifts, they're experiencing a lack of focus. It doesn't seem like there is a concrete message that's going to move them forward.
Well, this is the Democrats. I mean, this is kind of who they are. They're very disorganized. The Democrats are not, they're not good at the sort of go for the jugular, hard-nosed politics they used to be.
Right.
Back when the Democrats were more sort of an ethnic party. They were kind of an ethnic white, ethnic black, ethnic party generally. Now they're a party that's looking for consensus, and they look for it, you know, so desperately that they never really come up with a coherent frame for themselves.
What do you mean when you say that?
Because Democrats, although they understand, I think, deep down that they're the party of black and brown people, of gay people, of marginalized people.
Right.
They still long to be the party of the sort of Pabst Blue Ribbon voter, the kind of Coors Light drinking voter.
Could they not be both, though? Why could they not be both?
Because those voters are Republicans.
Do you think definitively across the board?
Yeah, I think that vote has migrated from being a Democratic Party vote to a Republican Party vote, and it has done for the last 40 years.
Right.
Democrats just can't accept it. So they don't understand that the voters they long to have back, those voters who, the sort of Archie Bunker voter that was a Democrat in the 70s, is now a Republican. And so they can long for them all they want. They're not going to convince them by saying, we'll give you free college. That's not why they're voting.
Right.
They're voting. And the way I kind of put it is this way. People say, well, why do people vote against their economic interests? Why don't they vote values? Democrats vote against their economic interests. If you live in New York and you make, you know, New York salary, you're voting against your economic interests whenever you vote for Democrats. They raise your taxes. You vote your values. So why do you think that people on the other side don't do the same? They're not voting economics. They're voting because the Republican Party represents their values. They don't care about the economics. So Democrats keep trying to use economic lures to pull them back in, but that's not why they're voting that way.
That is literally the worst analysis I've ever seen in my life. She has absolutely no idea what she's talking about. So, first of all, how can you be so sure that that message wouldn't resonate when we didn't have a candidate that used that message? Hillary Clinton used the thing that you're advocating for, and she lost. So you're saying, well, I mean, come on, ignore the white working class voter, only focus on identity politics, and that's the Democrats need to own it, that's what they are. So, and she said it, you can't be both. You can't be the party of black, brown, and gay people, and can't be both. She said it. She said they're Republicans now. So run on identity politics and you'll win. But that's what Hillary did, and she lost. She lost. She didn't go to the Rust Belt and, campaign hard against outsourcing jobs and stupid so-called free trade deals. She didn't do that. She didn't run an unapologetic campaign on Medicare for All and free college. She didn't do that. In fact, only 25% of her ads were on policy. That's it, only 25%. So she doesn't run a campaign based on economic policy and just policy substance in general. She loses. And then Joanne Reid says, man, definitely don't try the opposite of what Hillary did. but Hillary lost doing what you want her to do. So what do you mean? And then furthermore, it's like she's never read a poll in her life. All these things that you're making fun of are things that are overwhelmingly popular. You want to know how I know it'll work if somebody runs on free college? Free college gets 60% support among the American people. You know how I know it'll work if people run on Medicare for All? Medicare for All has 60% support among the American people. Medicare itself has 77% support. You want to know how I know somebody will win if they run on taxing the rich? That has 60% support. You go down the line here. Virtually everything that the populist left stands for is something that's overwhelmingly popular. Living wage. Are you kidding me? If you run on a living wage, 80% of the American people want to raise the minimum wage. 80%! There are even more Republicans that support raising the minimum wage than don't. There's even more Republicans that support Medicare for All than don't. So you have these ideas that are overwhelmingly popular according to the polls. And Joanne Reed goes, no, you can't win if you run on those. And by the way, the person who most strongly advocates for those things right now is the most popular politician in America, by far and away. The only guy who's out there consistently talking about these things all across the country, Bernie Sanders, is a guy who is by far and away the most popular politician in the country. And Joanne Reed says, no, don't go in that direction. And also, what she has such weird implications in there, as if black and brown people don't want free college, and somehow free college is only supposed to appeal to white working class voters, and economic interests are only supposed to appeal to white working class voters. How preposterous is that? As if people of color and gay people and minority groups don't also want a living wage, free college, Medicare for all, ending the wars, doing a new deal to rebuild our infrastructure. It's like she's looking for the least accurate opinion to then give that. Like, how can I say something stupid? Let me see here. Don't run on things that are overwhelmingly popular, that the overwhelming majority of the American people want, like free college. No, don't do that. You know, only run on identity politics. And also, like, so even if the Democrats got every single minority voter in the country, they wouldn't win. Do you not get that? So even if she doesn't like the white working class voters, you still need them. Like, do you not get that? Like, the math, the way the math works, you're still going to need white working class voters. And you don't need to do that. You don't need to gain white working class voters by, like, shitting on minority voters. You don't have to do that. There are ideas and policies that appeal to both of them very strongly. And that also gets you crossover voters from the right. So, you know, it's almost like she's a host on a corporate media network. And it's almost like that corporate media network, the last thing they want is a living wage legislation, free college, Medicare for all. It's almost like corporate interests have brought her to the point of saying, don't push anti-corporate policies, Democrats, only run on identity politics. Interesting, because when you run on social issues and identity politics, there's really very little consequence for corporations now, isn't there? There are people who actually like her. There are people who think she's, like, populist left. The fuck are you talking about, man? This is, ugh. She's as corporate a corporate Democrat as you can get, and her analysis is horrendous. Okay. Another one of my favorite stories. GTFOH, son. Get the fuck out of here. Okay, here we go. Corporate media has floated the idea of John Kasich and John Hickenlooper running on a unity ticket for president in 2020. Hickenlooper is a Democratic governor. Kasich, of course, is a Republican governor, and he ran for president the last time around. And CNN got in on the fun here and had an interview with both of them. And I think this may be their saddest segment ever. Now, there's a lot of sad ones to choose from. You know, for example, when they put the picture up, It was like, breaking news, Titanic sank 102 years ago today, or something to that effect. They actually did that. They used breaking news for something that happened over 100 years ago. Or when fucking Don Lemon was talking about how the missing Malaysian plane may have gone into a black hole. One of the dumbest things I've ever heard in my life. Or when Wolf Blitzer told Rand Paul that, well, what about the profits of the defense contractors if we stop arming Saudi Arabia? There's a lot of sad moments to choose from, man. This is right up there with the rest of them. So they're going to have on Hickenlooper, which is always a funny last name. It sounds like a cereal. Did you pick up some Hickenloopers, Mom? You're going to have Hickenlooper and Kasich, and look at how giddy they get when they get some positive attention. Let's watch.
That's how, I mean, we're going to have substantive changes and really strengthen the entire system.
I do have to ask you, since I have you both here, because you were both shooting down speculation that you could be running together in 2020. We whipped up a little something, just
for
a little.
What? Just, running you, for what?
You know, not dog catcher, okay?
What is it we're running for?
Well, you know, the big White House. So we whipped up a little something. It's just a little poster just to give you a taste of what it would look like. So I don't know, isn't that a little enticing, Governor Kasich?
Well, there's a lot of stars around that. Listen, I hope my wife doesn't have the show on tonight. I want to eat dinner at home. I want to be able to get in my home. And if you guys are cooking something up, I got to make sure that I can sneak in and tell her I wasn't a part of it.
That's not a no.
What,
I mean, look.
Hickenlooper looks so good on that. It's really enticing. He should seriously think about it.
Well, and you know there's options here. There's options here. Look, we can also switch it up. You can see that Governor Hickenlooper, I mean, what do you think about this? Could this be a possibility for you?
Now we're talking. No, I don't think it's going to happen. And I admire and I really enjoy working with Governor Kasich. He's been a great partner in this, and I think we are going to find things we can work on together, but
What would make it happen? With so much convention being thrown out the window when it comes to politics, what might make you consider
Here's the situation. What is so astounding to me is that John, successful small businessman, terrific guy, and I am working together, and people like can't believe it. They can't believe that a Republican and Democrat can get together. This is the way it used to be. And let me suggest one other thing. We're not doing this because we want to run for something. We're doing it because we think we can help people. And as I said just in an interview not long ago, why is it anytime anybody does anything good, there's suspicion as to why they're doing it? Now, what we're seeing are people doing wonderful things down in Texas, not because they want anything. See, it brings out the best in us. Life is short. And, you know, what I think John and I both answer to is the Lord's call that we can give everybody a chance and lift everyone. Well, and that's what we are all about.
Oh, shut the fuck up, man. Oh, please shut the fuck up. Make it stop. Oh, us? Run for president? No. You like us? And CNN, what are you doing? This will be news. And they're like, wouldn't this be very enticing? Folks in the audience, Hickenlooper Kasich 2020, huh? I know you all love that, huh? Yes, people are just falling all over themselves. I mean, it's like the Beatles in their prime. Or fucking, what's the new one that everybody likes? Not everybody, the young girls like One Direction or some shit. Do they still exist? I don't know. My knowledge of boy bands died after Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, as it should be. nobody gives a fuck about John Kasich and John Hickenlooper. That is literally the most boring pair possible. I mean, you may as well run a piece of toast and a glass of milk and do Milk Toast 2020. You know who's in favor of this? The establishment are the only people that love this. And that's why the establishment media, CNN, is pushing it. You want to know why? Because John Hickenlooper and John Kasich would do every single pro-establishment policy imaginable. They would help the corporations. They wouldn't care about the middle class. But as they do it, they put a smiley face on it. They put a polite American face on it. We're respectable people who talk nicely to people as we cut their unemployment insurance and their Medicare. What? And we're bipartisan. This has everything to do bipartisanship. What? You have a Republican and a Democrat, and they're coming together. How can anybody disagree with that? Hey, idiots, bipartisanship is not inherently good. Because usually when the Democrats and the Republicans agree on something, they're agreeing to screw over the middle class and help corporations. So stop. They're trying to feed this to the audience as if the audience is going to like be like, oh, are we supposed to be excited by Hickenlooper and Kasich? Yes, Hickenlooper, Kasich 2020. Yes, nobody wants that. And, you know, here's how you know it's the saddest thing ever. Hickenlooper and Kasich, nobody knows who the fuck they are. I mean, some people know Kasich because he ran in the Republican primary last time. But most people don't know who the fuck they are. Most people in Hickenlooper's own state don't know who the fuck he is. So when you give these guys a little bit of positive attention, look at how they melt. Look at how they melt. It's like a 16-year-old girl that just got called, like, pretty by their crush at school. Like, you want us to run? You like us? This is so great. You're the only ones that like us. But let's try to make this a thing. Like, there's millions of people who want it to happen. Nobody wants. It would serve the establishment with a polite smiley face. And they're like, and they're so full of shit. Oh, my God. Us running? No. I mean, sure, we're randomly doing an interview with the two of us on CNN on national media for seemingly no goddamn reason whatsoever. But no, it's not because we're thinking of running. How dare you suggest that? You know, I want my wife to let me in the house tonight. It was hard when I ran last time around, so, she's got to let me in the house. And while we're at it, here, let me serve you up some fresh, steaming platitudes and cliches. Oh, here we go. You know, we're working together because that's the way it's supposed to be. And we're doing the Lord's work. Yes. Do you like my establishment bullshit talking points? I'm not thinking of running. Anyway, Casey Kicking Looper 2020. So sad. Every aspect of that is sad. Everything about that is sad. Okay. Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, there's a viral video of Obama making its way around the internet, and it's supposed to show you what our old political scandals look like versus our new ones. We're gonna break this down, man. We're gonna break this down bigly. Believe me. Let me just tell you. I have to tell you. So we'll do that, and then we have an Al Jazeera reporter who was on MSNBC covering the disaster. And he spoke truth, and as a result of that, his mic got cut. Maybe, we'll see. We'll let you guys make the final determination as to whether or not you think that's what actually happened. And there's an uncomfortable number of politicians, who threatened lynching over Confederate monuments. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, come on, Kyle. That didn't happen. That's not what it... Wait for it. Fucking wait for it. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about. So we have that and much more. Stay right there, everybody. We will be right back.
Thank you. Yeah. then hold your breath. This shit ain't cut as raw. This shit gon' sell itself.
All right, y'all, we back. For a tremendous, unbelievable final 30 minutes of the week. Oh, by the way, program note real quick. Monday is Labor Day, and we are not here. We'll be back on Tuesday, but Monday there is no show. So we'll be back on Tuesday, same time, same place, but Monday, no show. Tell your friends. Tell everybody who listens to Secular Talk. Tell your grandmother. I know she's a big Secular Talk fan. And tell her to holler at your boy. Okay. Jeez. Okay. The video about Obama that's making its way around the internet. Where are you at? There you go. There's a viral video about Obama that's making its way around the internet. It's supposed to show what our old political scandals looked like versus our new ones under Trump. So let's check it out.
The president's tan suit is now a Republican target.
Hey, did you hear? President Obama was wearing a tan suit at a press conference.
That's a major media issue, don't you think?
Take a look. There's the president. Can you guess what has people talking? It's that suit.
Fantastic.
The audacity of Tote.
Yes, we can.
This suit is not presidential.
What do you think about the brown suit, the beige suit, the tan suit?
Was it beige? Was it taupe? Was it cream? Was it khaki?
Or all of the above?
Stone?
One of the ugliest suits in the history of America.
I think it was shocking to a lot of people.
Look at that. That horrible light tan suit. An impeachable offense right there.
And I looked twice to make sure he wasn't a circus ringmaster. The only thing missing was the top hat.
Whoever talked me into going into a tan suit, they're so desperate because of these low poll numbers, they're willing to do anything.
A serious businessman wears dark blue or black to important meetings. I think it's a sign to enemies that he's a wimp.
This confirms he's a Marxist.
If you're going to a garden wedding, the tan suit's fine. Otherwise, forget it.
That's the other thing is, if they say it didn't fit.
Some people saying it was too casual, not presidential, and the wrong color for the world leader.
There's no way I think any of us can excuse what the president did yesterday. He gets to walk out. I'm not trying to be trivial here, but in a light suit,
he looked like he was on his way to a party at the Hamptons. It did not show the seriousness of purpose that you need from a commander-in-chief.
This is not presidential. Dress.
I think he was wearing a jogging suit.
It's just a taupe suit. You gotta be kidding me.
I take nothing away from Americans' right to tweet anything they want, but it's a show, for God's sake.
Only liberals could actually elect a guy in a tan suit.
Perhaps President Obama was channeling one of his predecessors. President Reagan wore a light tan suit.
It's not like he's out there wearing a purple suit or a pink suit. It's a tan suit.
Why are we so concerned about the color of a suit?
The president stands squarely behind the decision that he made yesterday to wear his summer suit at yesterday's press conference. It's a Thursday before Labor Day. He feels pretty good about it.
Okay, so listen. I get what they're trying to do. Oh, look at the old scandals under Obama, and look at them compared to the ones about Trump. I mean, obviously, back then, everything was so much better. And are there some issues, many issues, where the right just made a mountain out of a molehill and they were making scandals out of nothing? Yes, this is one of them, the tan suit. There was one where Sean Hannity covered Obama putting mustard on his burger or something and used that to say, oh my God, look how elitist and out of touch he is. He put mustard on a burger. Ugh, that's like un-American. And there's many examples of that. I mean, there's this outrage industry on the far right, and this is the kind of stuff that they peddle in. Now, at the same time, the underlying implication here is just wrong. The implication being, well, here's the scandals back then versus the ones now are crazy. Back then, this is what we were concerned about, tan suits. That's what... No. Here's what real people were concerned about. Here are some actual scandals that Obama was the centerpiece in. How about Edward Snowden? And so Obama had a war on whistleblowers. Edward Snowden leaked the information about how the NSA is spying on all of us and collecting all of our metadata, and it's unconstitutional, and your Fourth Amendment protection from unreasonable search and seizure is gone. So you have a whistleblower who's doing a public service, and he's hiding in Russia. And he has to hide in Russia because Obama was going to prosecute him, and Edward Snowden was legally not allowed to use public good as a defense. So he wasn't allowed to say, I did this because what the government was doing is unconstitutional, and I was doing a public service by releasing this information. So how about Obama's war on whistleblowers? You know, oh, he did the right thing at the end with Chelsea Manning, but Edward Snowden is still in hiding to get away from a government that is oppressing him, and that started under Obama. So there's a real scandal. How about the fact that drones under Obama killed 90% the wrong people? That's the internal drone memos that leaked. So it's not like Code Pink did some sort of analysis and gave you a number. It's this is the government internally admitting that, and then that leaked. So Obama had a fucking kill list, and we're going to act like, oh, 10 suits. 10 suits were the only things that we were concerned about back then. See, this is the point that people make when they say when you elect a Democrat, you put the left to sleep. So many people on the left go, oh, our guy's in power, so now we're going to shut down our minds and play defense and pretend like the biggest scandal was the tan suit. Well, no, the biggest scandals are the things I'm bringing up now. How about the fact that Obama had a supermajority, and not only did he not push for Medicare for All, which if you have a supermajority, that's what you should be getting. He didn't even really push for a public option. Not even a week. They were like, yeah, we want the public option. Oh, okay, I guess not. Now we'll just propose the right-wing idea of Obamacare, which is an individual mandate-style system, which the Heritage Foundation wrote policy papers about. That's a right-wing think tank. Bob Dole supported a version of this. Mitt Romney implemented it in Massachusetts. Richard Nixon proposed a version of an individual mandate system. So at the end, he just proposed a right-wing policy. That's not scandalous. That's scandalous to me that the person from the supposedly left-wing party is proposing right-wing ideas. That's scandalous. How about Abdul Rahman al-Awlaki, a 16-year-old American boy who Obama killed with a drone? No due process. They could have tried him without him there in the courtroom. They didn't. He just killed him. How about Guantanamo Bay still being open when he left? How about the fact that he inherited 2 interventions overseas, and when he left, there were 7 interventions overseas? How about the various pieces of legislation that he signed that ended up helping Wall Street? How about that? These are real scandals, guys. When we pretend like the Democrats have no problems, you're undermining what's supposed to be democratic policies and principles and goals. So just stop with the bullshit. You can oppose Trump without doing shitty apologetics for Obama. That's the main point here, and that's something people need to digest. Okay. I don't know what it is, but towards the end of every show, my throat gets hoarse. So I chugged a drink, and hopefully that'll help. Okay, now let's go to MSNBC cutting off truth. Al Jazeera reporter Shihab Ratanzi was on MSNBC covering the disastrous flooding in Houston and in Texas more generally with Ali Velshi, and his mic got cut at a curious time. So let's watch, and then we'll discuss.
Actually, let me put this in historical context. I know you were talking to someone in Port Arthur a moment ago. We're in what's called the Golden Triangle in the southeast. So we have Orange is one point of that triangle to the north. We're in Beaumont, and then we have Port Arthur to the south. Now, you know, it's interesting. The reason why it's called the Golden Triangle is because this is the first place in the United States where they discovered large quantities of oil in 1901.
Right.
And that led to the Texas oil boom and the huge amounts of money come pouring into this region. It's pretty clear, though, that despite that, money has not been flowing into this region for the infrastructure, for the climate change effects that we knew were inevitable because of the oil and gas industry's activities on this coastline. even as those oil and gas industries were covering up what they knew about climate change in the 70s. I have to go on about this. Ali, you're an Al Jazeera guy. We get to the point on Al Jazeera.
Yep.
So that is very striking for us here. So much money has been made on this region.
She hasn't gone to deal
with the climate change that was inevitable.
Hold that thought for 1 second, because on the screen we've got a live helicopter rescue. I believe I'm going to ask my control room. This is in Beaumont. Miguel Almaguer, I believe, is on that helicopter. And, Chad, this is a major point. You are not only in the heart of oil country, you are right around where the strategic petroleum reserves are. There are refineries there, chemical plants. There's been a lot of this kind of discussion, and yet this is what we're seeing. We're seeing roads that are completely, completely covered, people trapped in their apartments and their dwellings.
You can't make the connection between the oil and gas industry and climate change much clearer. And, you know, you were talking to someone in Port Arthur. We understand the largest crude oil refinery in the United States in Port Arthur is shutting down. That might sound very prudent, but what we know from experience is when you shut down these refineries, there's a huge amount of toxic gas that's released. So we've got to watch out for all that. And in the past, oil and gas companies have just got away with covertly just like losing a lot of toxic waste in emergencies like this. But it's not rocket science. I mean, this has been warned about for years by climate scientists. ProPublica had a piece just last year warning that something like this was bound to happen in the Houston area at the very least. And yet this is all coming as a surprise, and there just aren't the preparations for it. And yet so much money has been generated here. The mayor yesterday talking about how she spent $5 million on roadways for drainage. Well, it wasn't enough. And yet there is more money here. And Texas politicians clearly have a lot to answer for, because they're the ones.
I think we may have just lost Shihab's line there. We're looking at another rescue in Beaumont. That.
That was quite the time that the call dropped, wasn't it? Now, of course, they would maintain, well, no, it was just a bad connection or whatever, and that's what happened. Maybe. I mean, usually when you have a bad connection, it's like, you know, like you notice it's a bad connection and it cuts in and out and it's fuzzy and then it's not fuzzy for a split second and then it's fuzzy again and it drops for a little bit and then comes right back. But no, it was just like, ah. So immediate drop off. And then also, usually if you drop the guy, what happens? You know, you'll go to break in a little bit and you come back and you talk to the guy again. He calls back. You sync up again. Now, I don't know. You guys tell me. I didn't see what happened after this segment, but did he call back? Did they get in touch with him again? I don't know. I genuinely don't know. So, curious. This happened a few times now, not just on MSNBC, but also CNN, whenever somebody starts to really drop some fucking truth. Anyway, drop that. So, there's a chance that the control room was like, nope. We're done here. This is getting too, this is hitting home a little too much. He's really telling truth to power, if you will, and bringing up corporate control over politics and the lack of regulation and all that stuff. And nope, we're done here. We're going to cut it off. Now, the reason why I think it's still an open question as to whether or not they did that is that Ali Velshi is actually usually pretty good. He's done some segments where he openly advocates for Medicare for all and he crushes Republican congressmen. So, there's a chance it wasn't, you know, the control room cutting him off because he's dropping too much truth. But I don't know. You guys tell me. I'm genuinely unsure what to believe. But if it is a coincidence, man, that's a mighty fucking convenient time to drop the call, isn't it? Because if you're going to drop the call, like, that's the exact amount of time of, like, anti-establishment truth-telling that I would expect before they say, you know what, we're done here. Drop them. So, is it conspiratorial? Is it not conspiratorial? I don't know. But damn, that guy makes some fantastic points. Shihab Ratanzi. Forgive me if I'm mispronouncing that, as I may be doing. But, here's one thing that's definitely not going to happen. They're not going to hire him. He is not getting a job on MSNBC, that's for damn sure. Because we know what happens when people tell a little too much truth on MSNBC. Ed Schultz was vocally against TPP. They fired him. Phil Donahue, he was the only voice against the Iraq war when everybody was ramping up to war. They fired him. Cenk Uygur was told, hey, man, you criticize Obama and the Democrats too strongly. Because Cenk wouldn't only bring up the corporate control over Republicans, but also Democrats. And he said, look, I'm not just going to play for Team Democrat. I'm going to tell you when the Democrats are screwing you, too. They fired him. So you have countless examples of MSNBC going, too much truth, drop them. So perhaps that's what's going on here as well. It always seems to happen. Whenever, like, you could tell truth to an extent, but then as soon as you cross the line, boom, you're gone. It's like Chris Hayes. Like, every now and then, he gives you, like, a little peek into, like, yeah, I kind of agree with you on the populist left. But then he reels it back in, and he starts doing warmed-over corporate Democrat talking points. And you're like, Chris? Chris, come on now. What are you doing here? Which side are you on? And you get the sense he's, like, walking the line, like, if I go too far in that direction, then I get fired. But if I go too far in this direction, I'm a complete and utter sellout. And he's just walking that tightrope all day long. Free yourself, Chris. Drop some real truth, and then, well, then you'll get fired. But at least you'll have your dignity intact and your honor. Okay. Now, we got two stories left, and then we're done for the day. And again, we will be back on Tuesday. We got the Blaze. I'm going to do that next. First, I'm going to do the insanely racist politicians. A politician in Missouri went a little too far in a Facebook post this week, and I'm putting it mildly by saying a little too far. Look at this. Missouri GOP representative wants Confederate monument vandal to be hung from a tall tree. Whoa. So Warren Love is this guy's name, and here's what he said. This is totally against the law. I hope they are found and hung from a tall tree with a long rope. And it says National Veterans Cemetery in Springfield, Missouri, and a vandal threw paint on a Confederate statue. Could you imagine that being your response to that? A vandal threw paint on a Confederate statue, which is like the lowest level of vandalism possible. And of all the things to vandalize, a Confederate monument I file under I care the least. But this guy says somebody should be hung from a tall tree with a long rope for doing that. I didn't know the death penalty was the punishment for mild vandalism, representations of slavery and Jim Crow and fuck the civil rights movement. And for the record, because we covered the story recently and I didn't know it, but I learned it the other week. I'm so fucking naive, I didn't realize it, but did you know the Confederate monuments were mostly put up, two time periods is when they were mostly put up. One, Jim Crow. They were put up during Jim Crow, specifically by the white majority as a fuck you to the black population and to let them know, hey, we're still boss around here, okay? Fall in line. You don't believe me? Here's a statue to, the Confederates who fought to keep you enslaved. They were put up during Jim Crow and the Civil Rights Movement. Gee, I wonder why they put up Confederate monuments during the Civil Rights Movement. It was specifically as a fuck you to the Civil Rights Movement and Martin Luther King Jr., and specifically as a fuck you to the people who wanted to end segregation. They wanted to say, no, we're not ending segregation. Here, remember these days? Remember the days when you were slaves? So, knowing the history of it, it's like, whoa, that is dark, man. That's what that is. This guy's saying, let's hang from the tallest tree with the long rope somebody who vandalized the Confederate monument. The real punishment for that is what, like a fine? Maybe? He's like, no, kill him. Thank you for tipping your hat and letting us know exactly where you stand here. Tipping your hat, tipping your hand, I don't know what the saying is. And then, okay, the same week as that happened. So we already have one threat of lynching for vandalizing a Confederate statue. Look at this next story. Georgia State GOP representative warns black attorney she'll go missing if she removes Confederate monument. Huh? What? Go missing. He actually made it even more clear in the post. I mean, he goes on. He says, there's a lot of people who have red necks around here, and they don't take kindly to this kind of stuff. So you might want to tread easy. Maybe you'll go missing if you keep advocating for this. There's a deep strain of bigotry and racism in the country, and it's been really coming out recently. You know, when if you touch that nerve, then there's a giant backlash, and that's what we've seen with the removing of Confederate statues. Sometimes it's through a legislature by legal means, other times it's protesters pulling them down. But the vicious response, you know, has been stunning. I mean, I think it's one thing to say, hey, I prefer keeping them up. If it's somebody who doesn't know the history of them and they just view it as, yeah, whatever, keep it up because it's been up and why go out of our way to take it down? And some people really do believe heritage and not hate, that that's what these things stand for. If it's somebody who has that opinion, fine. Totally fine. That's categorically different from people who are threatening fucking lynching over taking them down. But it takes a totally different kind of person to, for example, show up to a protest in favor of keeping these things up. Because you look at the people who show up. It's across the board, white supremacists, neo-Nazis, and in the best case scenario, just a white nationalist. So the viciousness of the backlash for what should actually be a pretty mild issue of like, hey, maybe we take down the statues that represent slavery and oppression of black people, that really goes to show you that there is a fervent strain of racism and bigotry still in the country. I don't know what percentage it is. I do think it's a low percentage. It's certainly not a majority. But damn, is it weird to see when it shows, and it shows in this strong a way. Okay. Final story of the day, everybody. The day has finally come. The Blaze conducts mass layoffs. So, The Blaze is Glenn Beck's network, his conservative network. Now, in 2016, they fired 40 people, but this week they let go of 20% of their staff. It's actually The Blaze and the affiliated, I think it's called Mercury Radio Network or something, so Glenn Beck's like affiliated company. 20% of their staff they're letting go. Now, this is something I saw coming. I saw it coming for a while. Many others saw it coming. And the reason we saw it coming is the various news reports on what was actually happening at The Blaze. For those of you who don't know, Glenn Beck basically went from Fox News and being on the cover of like Time magazine and stuff to getting fired because he was too extreme for Fox News with his conspiracy theories, to launching his own network. And Glenn Beck, as well as Rush Limbaugh, by the way, and Mark Levin and some of these other guys, they're welfare cases. So what I mean by that is not government welfare, of course not, but they are projects of right-wing think tanks. So oftentimes with these right-wing pundits, they genuinely can't make it in the free market. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't other right-wing pundits who can make it in the free market, because there are right-wing pundits who can make it. But these guys are not them. So they couldn't really make it in the free market. So what happens is they're subsidized. And they're subsidized by right-wing think tanks who are paying them basically to push the propaganda that the corporations want, which is, you know, hey, always deregulate, always cut taxes for the rich. And then with guys like Beck and Limbaugh do 8,000 conspiracies about Democrats and your audience eats it up, your small audience eats it up. But what's happened is those right-wing think tanks have not really seen a return on investment. They give all this money to Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and other right-wing commentators, and they go, what are we getting out of this? Their ratings suck, so there's no tangible benefit for us. So we're just taking money and giving it to them, and there's really no reason to do it. So for all of these shows, it's just a matter of time until they cut off the flow of cash. Now, usually what would happen is with shows like this, well, it's okay, they can make other revenue from commercials, from ads. Well, these shows have been so mired in scandal for so long because of so many shitty things they said that advertisers ran from them at 1,000 miles an hour. Rush Limbaugh used to get advertisers. Then it got to the point where on his flagship station in New York, they had dead air in the commercial breaks. It was public service announcements and dead air because all the advertisers ran. In his case, it was specifically after the Sandra Fluke incident when he called a woman a whore because she wanted health insurance to cover, birth control. She called her a slut or something and did this stupid fucking rant. And advertisers were like, yeah, we're out. So they don't get advertisers. On Beck's network, if you look at his advertisers, it's like fucking, ammo companies and survival seeds and guns and like all the low-paying ads that can't prop up an entire network with a bunch of employees. So they don't generate money through ad revenue. They don't have that many people to do, some sort of membership or something. And most of their funding came from the welfare they're getting from right-wing think tanks. Well, as soon as those right-wing think tanks cut off the flow of cash, well, then they're fucked. And in the case of Beck, that's what's happening. And with Beck, it's actually a particularly interesting case because he, ever since the rise of Trump, has been more on the, no, I don't like Donald Trump, team. So you have this right-wing network, and then when you get a Republican president, and a guy who got a lot of support, well, right there, half your audience is going to go, fuck you. Sure, the other half might be Ted Cruz people like you, Glenn, and be just as dumb, if not dumber, for supporting Ted Cruz. But you're saying fuck you to half your audience because he was really vocally against Trump. So it's hard for right-wing outlets to survive if they don't – like with Limbaugh, he plays half and half with Trump. Like, oh, sometimes I agree with him, sometimes I don't. But with Beck, he was more like, no, I don't like Trump. So he doesn't like Trump, but he loves Ted Cruz, so don't give him too much credit for not liking Trump because he likes the even worse guy, Ted Cruz. And half of his audience, which was already small to begin with, fled. Now the right-wing think tanks are cutting off the flow of money, so where are you going to go? You got no more tricks up your sleeve. And then on top of that, they're in a tremendous amount of debt because they expanded too much. So for the longest time, the Blaze, Rush Limbaugh, these guys are a house of cards, man. Now, again, that doesn't mean there aren't right-wing outlets that aren't genuinely popular. Of course there are. Unfortunately, you can say, Alex Jones is very popular. He is. He gets decent numbers. And there are other ones, too. But at least for Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, these guys are not popular. Glenn Beck had his heyday when he was on Fox News under the Obama administration. Rush Limbaugh had his heyday in the 90s. He still cites numbers from the 90s about his ratings, and they're nowhere near true. It's like 10% of that now. So TikTok, their time's running out. We have a 20% layoff, and there's definitely more to come. All right, guys. I love you. We're done for the day, skis. We will be back on Tuesday. Everybody enjoy your Monday, your holiday. And we'll see you then. Peace out.